This is Chris Smith interviewing Manly Howard at his home in Morristown, Tennessee, on April the 1st, 1995. The subject of the interview is environmental factors that he has observed and participated in that has influenced the environment. Mr. Howard, would you please tell us the date and place of your birth?
I was born in March the 21st, 1919, in Akron, Ohio.
And what was your parents' name?
My father's name was Michael Lawrence Howard. My mother's name was Constance Long Howard.
And what about your spouse?
My wife's name is Lois Johnson Howard.
What education did you receive, and where did you graduate college from?
I graduated at East Tennessee State with a B.S. in chemistry. I also received training at University of Delaware and UT.
And what career did you choose after your education?
Chemical engineering for the first part of my career, and later I began working as a consultant for various companies who were having difficulty having a cash flow.
And why did you choose chemistry?
I was always interested in chemistry as a boy. And that was a field that was wide open at that time. That was in the late 30s.
What were some of your earliest recollections of pollution or environmental factors that have affected the world you live in?
As I look back now, when I was a little, while I was a young boy, life was simple and easy. Milk and ice was delivered every other day by a horse-drawn wagon. The amount of ice you wanted was determined by a card that you placed it on a post in front of your house. You put it one way, it would be 20 pounds, another way 40, another way 60. The man on the ice wagon would put the ice in your ice box for you. Also, milk was delivered to your house each day by these items were delivered by a horse-drawn wagon, and the horse would know at which house to stop. You'd bypass any house that you weren't used to stopping at.
Didn't need it.
Also was unusual or unique in that time, many houses had a gas cooking stove. They had a meter at the back that you inserted a quarter. And you insert a quarter, that entitled you to a certain amount of hours of cooking. And, of course, that has long since disappeared. Garbage was a way of life. It was collected by a horse-drawn wagon. And it was carried to the garbage dump and just dumped on the ground. People sorted through it for anything they wanted. I've been there many times looking around. And what was left, they'd burn the burnable and just leave what was ashes and what was not burnable just on the ground, just left there. Rats, dogs, possums were common in the garbage dump. Sewerage was never a problem in those days. It was simple. It was dumped into a second creek, nearby creek, untreated. Everybody knew not to eat fish or go swimming in Second Creek for 10, 15, 20 miles downstream. Horse manure wasn't piled on the streets, but it was scattered up and down the streets everywhere. The English sparrow, which was an import from England, unintentional, lived on the undigested grains in the horse manure. You'd see a pile of new droppings of horse manure, you see about a 50 English sparrow just fly into it, just to eat. Even then, as I grew older, I realized that plants were important, and industries were having difficulty finding a place to locate for clean water. A good clean water supply determined the location of plants. This is especially true of textile and chemicals, which I later went into this business. Plants would locate where the water was clean and supply of labor. They would withdraw the good clean water, purify it more, filter it, and so forth. Then the sewer that they returned back to it contaminated it for 15 or 20 miles downstream. This was common. No one thought anything about it, and it was a way of life. I remember reading an article in our weekly reader when I was in the 5th or 6th grade, that was the middle of the 20s, about a town, I think it was Charleston, South Carolina, that had solved the clean water and the sewer problem. As I remember it, two rivers ran close to each other through the town, the Cooper and the Santee. One river was designated as clean, and every effort was made to maintain clean water way upstream. The other river was designated as a sewer, and any plant could dump anything they wanted to in this river, and it would flow out into the ocean and be gone from sight or harmless. This was considered the ultimate solution to pollution. Chemical, textile, paper, and steel mills were the most notorious as polluters. Steel in those foundries would blow dirt into the air and it would just scatter for miles and miles. The chemical, textile, and paper would also put poisonous gas into the air. Steel mills too, put poisonous gas into the air. They ruined the water in the air for miles around. Women could only wash and hang out their clothes only if the wind was right. Copper companies were notorious polluters with the sulfur dioxide. They roasted the copper ore, and the sulfur dioxide would just escape into the air. I visited Copper Hill and was amazed at what I saw there. The land around for miles was completely bare. No blade of grass grew. It looked like land on the moon.
What year was this around?
That was in the 40s, in the 50s. It was 40s and 50s. It had not been corrected.
When was the plant originally opened up there?
In the early 1900s.
Well, that amount of devastation only took a couple of decades.
And I heard that the boundary between Tennessee and Georgia varied to eliminate Copper Hill.
Nobody wanted it.
Nobody wanted it. They attempted to correct this problem. They built high smokestacks to carry the sulfur dioxide into the air and hopefully into the jet stream and carry it away. However, it saved a few miles right around the town, right around the plant. Then it came back down to earth, and it was a huge, barren donut for miles around the town. This was later corrected after the war because of the demand for sulfuric acid. They took the sulfur dioxide, SO2, and made sulfuric acid out of it and sold it. And I understand it was even more profitable than the copper. Another bad polluter that I was associated with a little bit was the plants that made sodium hydroxide and chlorine gas. And chlorine gas was for drinking water. Sodium hydroxide was for industry. They made this by using salt, that's sodium chloride. Sodium hydroxide, they used in instance, and salt, which is sodium chloride. They used electrolysis to separate the chlorine and the sodium. And mercury was the electrode. And the electrode, the mercury, would escape into the water. And even now, downstream from plants, that had made sodium hydroxide and chlorine. There's mercury that is dangerous to eat fish or drink from them. And because the mercury is so heavy, it just stays in the low places in the riverbed. An interesting article in the National Geographic in 1987, they had an article about pollution in the world. They claimed that Cubatão in Brazil was the most polluted town in the world. When I was in Brazil, I worked there, and I can agree that this was one of the most polluted towns in the world at that time. Many people you'd see walking around outside their house have a handkerchief over their nose certain times. I talked to the people about the pollution, and no one seems to care. It's just a way of life. And my feeling at that time was that the government was willing to sacrifice that generation of people to emerge from one of the third nations up into an industrial nation. But I understand that they're still trying to emerge into an industrial nation, still just as bad now as it ever was. I was reading an article, and it was one of the first attempts I know of to improve on pollution and working conditions. DuPont, a company that came over here from France and manufactured explosives, dynamite, powder, and so forth. And it was common in those days, I'm talking about in the 1800s, to have an explosion, kill and injure people, and damage the plants. It's just a way of manufacturing explosives. DuPont decided to do something about it. They required the management of these plants to live in the plant. That meant that their families lived in the plant. And the accidents dropped remarkably. Practically eliminated the bad gas in the air. And now I do not know the name, don't remember the names of this plant that the first experiment was run, but it's written up in the Life of DuPont. I have that book. And DuPont has always been one of the, and Hercules, where I work for, leaders in safety and pollution. And in one plant, there's a sign at the exit for the employees. Be careful. You're now entering the most dangerous part of your day. In other words, the plant was safer than their home was. Or driving back and forth, drive home. Chemical pollution is not the only damage to our environment. Potatoes, which were originated in the Americas, was brought to Ireland, and that was their staple. In fact, I understood they ate potatoes three times a day. Back in the early 1900s, they had the potato famine. People starved to death in Ireland, and that was the exodus of the Irish to the United States. Other things that have caused a change in our environment, I remember the boll weevil liked to devastate the South until they developed a cotton that had a strong enough cover for the boll that the weevil couldn't get in. The bean beetle, potato bugs, they ate up all the everything that we got a way to control it with chemicals, which is not good. The chestnut blight killed all the chestnuts. That came in from the Orient. The elm tree blight, I understand, came in from Europe. That's killed all the elm tree. Now the oaks and pine trees are dying here in the United States. Also, I remember the Dust Bowl back in the 30s. I remember they shipped in cattle from the West, and they were just, you could almost see the bones through the skin when they and put them on land in the North Carolina. And I remember the Dust Bowl the evenings on a sunny day, the sky was red. It looked like it was on fire from the sand particles in the air.
Sunlight hitting it.
And they, at first, they knew nothing to do about it. Then later they realized that it was the agricultural practices they had applying everything and not leaving strips.